Welcome to episode 15 of the Trail Runners Experience. I'm your host, Coach Daniel Ferrugia. On this episode, I talk with elite runner John Chenge. John is a highly accomplished marathon runner with numerous marathon titles under his belt. In this episode, we discuss his recent success at the Sydney Marathon, where he was crowned Australian Marathon Champion, and his amazing win at the 2018 Yarrabilla Ultra Marathon this past weekend. John goes into great detail about the challenges that come with transitioning from road running to trail running and how he approaches this common but often challenging change. So sit back and enjoy the show. Okay, so I'm sitting here with the 2018 Yarrabilla champion, Australian Marathon champion, and champion of many other races, John Chenge. Welcome.
G'day.
Thanks for joining me, and how are your legs feeling?
Yeah, thanks for having me. They're feeling a bit sore after Sunday. It's only 2 days after Yarrabilla. They're okay, but yeah, just they've got sore spots that I usually wouldn't have after a race, being the fact that it's a trail race. I think you get soreness in things, places like my shins. Just a bit different to usual.
Yeah, it's more on the small, all the rocks and everything, isn't it? Like in the steeper climbs.
Yeah, what I noticed after the race is I had sore feet, which I usually don't have sore feet after a marathon. So yeah, that was something new as well. Yeah.
Do you you wear trail shoes or road shoes?
I was just wearing road shoes, so some lightweight training shoes.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So yeah. Probably.
So not race shoes, not racing flats, or not heavy trainers, just light trainers, but new ones. So they feel a fair bit of cushioning still in the foam, so they're really new. But just light trainers.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. A lot of people go for your pretty hardcore like Salomon trail shoes and things like that with really big. So you haven't ventured into that.
Bit of solid. Yeah. Solid. No, I haven't looked at that yet. So trail running's fairly new to me. So
fairly new. I mean, you had a pretty good debut on Sunday. First big like Yarrabilla. I mean,
yeah, that's my longest run ever. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh wow. So yeah, you're a bit of a veteran of the marathon scene, though, aren't you?
Yes,
yeah.
So I've probably done about 24, 25 road marathons. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And so in the last 10 days ago, going only about 10 days, isn't it?
Yes.
You were over in Sydney and had an amazing run. We'll talk about both the races that you've just done, but you had a great run over at the Sydney Marathon.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I saw that it was the Australian Championship for that race, and so I looked into what you needed to do to be in the Australian Championship, and so I. Found out an Athletics SA website, joined up with a club there, so I could, they provided some assistance to getting there, so they provided a night's accommodation plus $150 or something towards the event, plus free entry and so on for the fastest three members for the team.
Yeah.
So, so I organised that and went over and did it, and it was the first time I've run the Sydney Marathon. And
it's a great course, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
pretty.
Yes, it's pretty. It goes through all of the it goes through Hyde Park, past the SCG, around Centennial Park, and then back along the foreshore towards the end. So it's past all the cafes and everything there. So it's it's a really beautiful course. Obviously, when I'm out there running, I'm not taking in too much. Most of the time, I'm thinking, am I going the right way, or because I'm pretty much running on my own for most of it. So
I suppose,
just trying to pick out which way to go. And
really, does that become an issue even in a big race like that?
Yeah, even though it's all coned and everything, you still have to decide which way to go, and also to run the tangents as well, so you're not running extra going around the outside of a bend. You try to pick the middle of the bend when you can, so you're cutting distance short, and then just working out. There's a fair bit of elevation change all the way through, so managing your effort over that as well.
For a road marathon, I saw that it was quite a bit. Actually,
yeah, because you've got Centennial Park, which is sort of behind the main hill of the city. Like, you have to go over the main hill, then down to Centennial Park. You do a bit around there, and then you come back over the hill again to the foreshore.
Yeah. I did the Sydney Marathon back in 2012, And the course has changed a little bit since then. And but yeah, I don't recall it being so that like so hilly, but you
Yeah.
know, like yeah.
Well, I
But I
mean,
guess when you're running fast, like a road hill can be quite challenging, you know, like if
yeah.
you don't want to lose too much on this on your
That's right.
yeah.
It's when you're trying to run a good time for a marathon, it is all
Yeah.
about trying to not have too many blowout kilometers. Like you can't, it's not like a trail race where it's okay if
Yeah.
you walk it for a bit because there's not much difference between walking and running with the steepness of the hill.
Yeah.
But when you're running on the road, you're not wanting to lose too many seconds because you have to make gain them back somehow. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. No, amazing. And so you I read a little bit. I didn't actually get to see the race, even though it was televised, but like, because I was out
Yeah.
on my own Sunday morning run and I was coming in and I remembered, I was like, oh, Sydney Marathon's on today. Came home, turned on the TV, and is it Kemboi, the Kenyan guy, was coming in,
Yep.
and I was like, oh, great, he only had a couple of k's to go. And I sort of watched the rest of that, and then I saw the results later on, and I saw your name pop up on the screen. And I was like,
Yeah.
oh, I know that guy. He's
Yeah.
broken inside the top 10, a ninth overall, which is amazing
Yeah.
for, I mean, I don't think Australians ever do get inside the top 10 there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
All right. Yeah, so what I was expecting to be on the TV as well, like I told my family, look, have a look and see if you can see me on the coverage there because there's a lot of African women that were coming over and racing, and they were sort of there was five people that had personal bests under 2:27, I believe, or under 2:28. So there was a
Yeah.
lot of top women there, and I was expecting that I'd be running with them, but they ran it a little bit slower and a bit more tactical. So I ended up being ahead of them, but
Yeah.
behind the very front leading men. So I didn't actually get on any of the coverage because I was too
Damn it.
quick for the women and too slow for the.
Yeah,
For
no man's land a bit.
the
Yeah. Which so
yeah.
you did you spend much of the race on your own? That you know
Yeah,
so you
I was pretty much on my own the whole way. I started off, I think I was in maybe fifth or sixth Australian, going through about 5K. Then I did a couple overtakes and that's all, that's the only time I had someone to run with was I think let's see, I ran past Clay Dawson at about 8K and then caught Brendan Davies at about 15 or something
Yeah.
and then Vlad Shatrov at about 21, 22 and I ran with him for about 100 metres and that was probably the only time I had someone to run
Oh, really?
with.
Well, he
So
finished that in 10th.
yeah,
Yeah.
I think I was just feeling better than him for longer. Like he was looked like
Yeah.
he was a bit he was struggling a bit and started to fade because he went out much quicker than me.
Yeah.
And then he didn't fade too much after that, so he, yeah, I
Yeah.
guess when I started to fade at the finish,
That when
he might have caught up to me a bit, yeah.
where your version of fading, like I mean, it's all relative, obviously.
Yes.
So you said it was the last couple of kilometers,
Yeah, I was
and
in a lot of trouble from about 30K onwards. Like
yeah.
I really was struggling. I was lucky that most of the last 10K was with a tailwind, so I
Yeah.
didn't blow out too much, even though my stride had changed and I was sort of staggering a bit. I was
Yeah.
still doing 340 to 345 Ks.
That, yep.
And then the last 2K was when I blew out really badly from about 40K onwards, and I was doing about 4-minute Ks for the last 2K.
Okay. So
Yeah.
you from an average of about 3:30 prior to that, or
Yeah, I
no?
was spot on 3:30 or just it was headwind for the first while, but I still was on just over 35 minutes for the first 10, just under 1:10 for the first 20, so that's 3:30 average. So yeah, I was there for about 25K at the 3:30 average, so 2:27 marathon pace.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
good. And so,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, obviously that's a very impressive time. And so I don't want to, I mean, obviously you're a very fast runner. You wouldn't be Australian champion if you weren't. But I think it's really reassuring for a lot of people listening that that even someone of your level can suffer in the last 10 kilometers.
Yeah.
It's a good thing because I mean, I always say it
Well,
to people that I've trained, you know, everyone hurts in the last 10 Ks. I don't care who you are, you know, because it's
that's
all
right.
the pain
Yeah.
is relative.
I mean, even if you're going for an easy easy training run and you decide to make your long run a 42k long run on the Sunday,
yeah,
you're going to really suffer the last 10k. It doesn't matter how slow you started.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a hard distance. I mean, I have not run an actual road marathon in about 4 years because I got onto the trails, that was it. You know, I've done...
Yeah, it's too many to choose from, isn't
it? Yeah, so, that's it. Yeah. But no, it's absolutely fascinating. And generally in a marathon, you see, even at the top level, I mean, the second half of a marathon is generally always a bit slower. So do you have that issue as well? Like the negative split, positive split?
Well, usually positive split by only a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been getting some guidance from Grenville Wood as sort of coaching me for the last year or so, and he saw how well I've been training in the lead up to Sydney, and he said, look, you've got to really go out and attack it a bit the first half of the race, because you've got the fitness that you should be able to hold on. So so rather than taking it a bit easier like I had earlier, like I ran the Adelaide Marathon back in May, and I ran that at sort of what I thought I could do without going too crazy, and then I felt pretty good for the last 10k.
Yeah.
This one was a bit different. I decided to go a little bit quicker for the first bit. So even though I was into a headwind, I was still, you know, running quite well at the start.
And got you the PB, didn't it?
Got me the PB. That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess in some ways, running the conservative first half is almost like the easy way out, because it's sort of, I know, and most people I know, that I like to start off a bit easy. And going out hard at the beginning can make the second half really painful, And so, so that's
interesting. Yeah, and it all depends on your fitness as well. Like, if you haven't done the work, it's going to be very difficult anyway. But you've got to make sure that you're pacing yourself enough so that you're not spending everything in the first half. So although I was attacking it a bit, I was still leaving plenty, and I was feeling good. Like I was at a pace that I wasn't pushing too hard, but I was feeling good. So sort of after 20k, sort of 25k mark is where it starts to really hurt, and where you start to have to put in a lot more effort to maintain the same speed.
Absolutely. I always say, and I think a lot of people say, marathon really doesn't start until 25-30k's, that's when I think people have become proper depleted, and that's where, if you haven't done the work.
And I don't mind for the last 10k, you know that that's going to be really difficult. It's when you get to 25 and you know it's getting difficult, you don't want to be really going to that, going few too many levels higher than what you have been. That's when it's really tough, because you don't want to be sort of putting in your finishing effort at 25k.
No, it takes something pretty special to get you across the line. And look, and you see, it happens to the best runners as well, but you go out too hard, and happens a lot in the ultra world as well, like UTMB, I mean, it's different distances, but, there was the top five sort of favourite men all DNF'd, They all went out, they pushed each other way too hard too early, and no one, the French guy was real smart.
Yeah. The reality was they weren't racing each other. They thought they were racing each other, and it was between them, and so they just had to outlast those people. But when they all bombed out, obviously.
With endurance sports like this, it's I heard a quote. It's something like, it's not who's the fastest. It's who manages to slow down the least in the last. So I'm holding on. But no, that's interesting. Adelaide Marathon, Sydney Marathon, success. I know you didn't win the Sydney Marathon outright, but first Australian.
Yeah.
We'll jump forward, and now this last weekend, you're a biller. And so very different kind of race with a pretty quick turnaround. You had a 1 week turnaround. Yeah. But, how did you manage that?
Well, I thought I'd just give it a go. My calves were really in a bad way after Sydney. My hammies were feeling a lot while I was actually running, but for the few days after, it was more than my calves that were just really locked up. And every morning I'd be waking up with cramps and everything, which is not usual for me. But I came to Thursday morning and I was almost almost good. I've been taking, you know, recovery baths and so on, trying to sort them out. And I thought, my calves will probably be all right to race Sunday. So I entered on Thursday, and by the time the race came round, I was okay, but just I wasn't ready to race. I was just feeling, you know, like I could go out training again normally, but I wasn't really on fire like I had, you know, felt for Sydney Marathon. So it made it difficult, and the fact that that's made me slow down a little bit more than if I knew that I was feeling good and on a good day. So I just had to just sort of manage it a little bit better, and just cruise through it. Sort of a training pace for me.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, it's a different type of intensity, and like a race like that. It was 56
kilometers. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. It's what I was thinking through is like, if I'm going out for a 56K Sunday long run, I'd have to be taking it pretty easy, and that's sort of what I was thinking. Yeah.
And so it's smart. So and like as you say, it's your longest run to date.
Yeah.
And obviously with a significant amount of elevation too. How did you find the hills in Yarrabilla? We're talking over 2,000 metres of climbing. Pretty tough, yeah?
Yeah, I don't mind the hills too much, but I faded a lot in Yarrabilla, a lot more than what I expected. I really suffered a lot in the hills. I was expecting that I'd be able to run most hills that I'd easily be able to run. I wasn't really running them very well. Towards the end, I was actually walking much more than I expected. So,
And I think when you come from a road background too, it's very common to feel, I mean, obviously someone even of your standard, it's easy to feel bad about walking up a hill when it's a 30% gradient.
Yeah.
That's not a normal hill.
Yeah, my biggest blowout was going up Orchard.
Beautiful hill.
Yeah. I went for an easy, sort of easy run 3 weeks ago, including the Orchard track, and I just did a slow run up the hill, got the Strava record for the track.
Yeah.
But on Yarrabilla race day, I was about 7 minutes slower than some of the other competitors up the same hill. So that's the indication of sort of how bad I was feeling at that stage.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, like that. I mean. That's a, what is it? It's about the steepest point of that hill is probably over 30%, and it goes for over a kilometre, you know.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a flat section in the middle, and then it goes up again, like a little, you think you're at the top, and then it goes, oh, here's a little bit more hill for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me 22 minutes to do 1.6K section.
So. Excellent. Well, you obviously had enough of a lead at that point.
That's right. I was thinking... You know, I was in such a bad way that at the aid station they asked if there's anything they could get for me, and I said DNF. I've been walking up to the aid station, and I stopped at the aid station, and I wasn't sure if I could start even walking again, let alone run up to the finish. But they said you got at least 15 minutes, so
yeah.
I thought, well, I'm probably going to need that, but we'll see how we go. And as it turned out, I was as fast as the other people behind me anyway. So everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, and the fact is, I mean, once you get to the top of that hill, you've still got probably 4 or 5 Ks to go.
Yeah.
And there's a few little ups and a few little technical sections through there, which I think people...
Yeah, at the bottom of Ghost Tree, you only got that other section. Yeah.
Which is a nice section because at least it's shady. There's a bit of tree cover. But, and so... I'm sure, because Yarrabilla has changed over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the finish line is now at Foxfield Oval, whereas it used to be on Gorge Road up here.
Yeah.
So you didn't spend as much time on Black Hill. It was just basically up and over.
Up and over, okay.
Yeah, but now it's sort of like you do spend a fair bit more time on the hill, which people are not a fan of, because the hills are... there's a lot of steep gradients, even the little climbs
So you think it'll be harder to get the course record with the new way it's set up, or
I think the finish is harder than it was in previous years.
Because
in previous years you'd go up the quarry track, which is probably about 2 kilometers, a bit over 2 kilometers, and a lot of it's very runnable, and it's probably the last couple of 100 meters that are really steep. But it's not it's longer than Orchard, but not nearly as steep.
Yeah.
And then essentially run across the top of Black Hill and then down and you're home. And yeah.
So you don't get those really blowout kilometres that you would.
No, not as much, yeah, you know. Yeah. And so, I mean, the course record on the old track, the original track, was held by Dave Byrne.
Yeah.
And I think it's something like 4 hours and 23 minutes or something. Yeah. And I mean, so, and I think last year, on the, it was the first year they did it on the new course, and I think it was about a, Andrew Hoff, about 4:59 or something. I think he just snuck under just 5. Under
5, yeah. Yeah. I was a bit disappointed I didn't go under 5 because I really did. After Murrayulta, I was just at a slow jog from Murrayulta onwards.
Very hot through Murrayulta too, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like an oven. Yeah. No,
but I managed my nutrition okay. Like I wasn't. Yeah. I was throwing up a little bit, but nothing too bad. And yeah. I'd managed to get in enough lollies and I alternated between Coke and water at the aid stations, which was quite good.
And obviously, like I say, going back to Sydney and then to this. I mean, obviously, maybe if you had not run Sydney, you obviously your legs are not fully recovered. You know, as you probably. So I did think,
my fastest splits were the downhill going down Brownhill Creek. That was the quickest part of the race. That would have been slower than my slowest part of Sydney. So,
I guess you had that being a little bit conservative because you're a lot to go. But next you'll be back next year for it, I hope. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I haven't planned out my second half of the year, but I reckon I will have a proper go at it instead of doing it with under duress. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, it's good that I mean, you obviously had a proper ultra marathon experience.
Exactly. That's ultra in all sense of the word. You know,
the suffering.
I didn't. Yeah, that's right. It's the suffering, but it was. I still think it was a really good experience because I got to practice my nutrition and it does. Nutrition and marathons not too bad. Usually if I can't get much in after 30K, that's okay because you've only got 12K to go. As long as you've taken in a bit before 30K, usually you're right. But in an ultra, you need to work out how you can keep it going. So
speaking of nutrition, what did you you said you had Coke and some lollies. So obviously a bit of sugar. Was there anything else that you had?
I had some watermelon at the Montacute Road, but that's about it. So just a couple of snakes at a couple of the aid stations. Most of the aid stations I grabbed a snake or two, but then and then I was alternating between water and Coke. So every half hour or so, changing from water to Coke in my carry bottle.
Interesting. I was at the Cleland aid station, which is about 22K mark, and you looked quite comfortable cruising through there. And I saw, I think it may have been your son that handed over your bottle of Coke.
Yeah, I told him to give me water there and Coke at the next one, but he gave me Coke, and I wasn't expecting it, but it was actually good. I was expecting to go a little bit longer before taking in the Coke because they can. Fizz up your guts a bit. So I was expecting to have water until the halfway point, but it worked out okay, and I enjoyed the Coke, and then just had I switched from Coke to water at the next one, so that was fine.
Oh, that's good. Interesting strategy. I personally, like when I've done with my ultras and stuff, when I got really serious about nutrition, it's when my own running improved a lot, so taking on a lot more actual food, eating and things like dates and have the occasional gel and
because I was thinking I may have been a bit low on electrolytes. That could have caught up with me towards the end, the fact that I wasn't taking any gels. Like usually I race with gels as well, but I thought I'll probably be okay with what they got on the aid stations and
it's very well supported. An amazing learning experience. And for your first ultra, I mean, you ran 5:12, 5 hours 12?
Was that actually my third ultra? I did the Cleland 50.
Title,
and I also did the Cedar Summit at Mount Remarkable about 5 weeks ago. And that was wasn't, I mean, you can call it an ultra. It was 42K, but I went the wrong way, so it was 44K for me.
An
so.
Unofficial ultra. So that's nice.
So it was actually it was meant to be a trail marathon, but it was an ultra for me. So
Oh, that's right. You did Cleveland as well.
Yeah.
So out of those three, what would you say was the hardest? Probably.
Probably Yarrabilla lasted a bit longer. The pain. I sort of ended up in the same amount of difficulty as Cleveland. The Cleveland, I suffered a lot. Sort of from about 40K onwards, I was in a lot of trouble. But
because the Cleveland 50 is still quite hilly, isn't it?
Yeah. But it didn't matter too much because of there was so much gradient in the last 10K anyway that everyone was going a bit slower, I think. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think I had 6 minutes lead on Andrew Hofford about 40K, and then only ended up beating him by a minute and a half. So if he'd gone a bit longer, he would have had me.
Yeah,
so,
he's a good hill climber. Yeah.
Yeah, and he paced himself better than I did. So, yeah.
But but obviously there's something to be said for that leg speed that you've got from the road marathons, you know.
Yeah, I think it makes your cruise speed along the trails a lot easier, a lot quicker. You know, and I guess just also the fitness you get from you know, working on your VO2 and so on through the marathon, means that I can run up hills fairly well as well.
Yeah, yeah. I often talk about the running economy, and I think I try and a lot of the people that I coach, you know, obviously sort of all different levels, you know. Even if they're training for a hilly trail ultra, I'll make them run on the flat. I'll say, you've got to get that flat running in to get that to increase your leg turnover and just become more comfortable with running a little bit faster. You know, even if fast is six minute k's.
I was finding at the Yarrabilla there are quite a few long runnable sections where you're not going really easy because it's steep downhill. You're not walking because it's steep uphill. You're sort of cruising along at a running pace, and you think, well, this is actually getting quite tiring just running on the flats.
Yeah, because you've got to make up some time. Yeah. I always use that. Yeah, absolutely. No, and like coming in that Norton Summit section, you know, coming through there.
Yep.
And
there's plenty of where you're just running along, cruising along, and it does become quite tiring, and you're sort of looking for that break of having a steep downhill to really lower your heart rate, or having a steep uphill so you can walk instead of running. Yeah.
No, very interesting. It's really good to see someone who's of such a high caliber coming over to trail running a bit and sort of offer, you've got that perspective. You've got a very different perspective because you already know so much about the road running. And which actually brings me. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your training, and just looking at you on Strava, you do a lot of miles, and obviously, I think I saw back there you do a few 200-kilometer weeks here and there, and that's pretty impressive. You want to tell us a little bit more about your approach?
Yeah, well, when I decided to take up road marathons seriously about four years ago, close to 5 years ago now. I had in my mind that the mileage was going to get me there, and so that was a big focus of mine. And I've been banging out high mileage and being a focus of making the body good enough to do the high mileage. That's changed a little bit now that I've had some guidance from Grenville Wood, who's a top SA marathoner in his time, and he's suggested that I need to focus more on my speed work, so more on my leg speed. There's, I guess I've developed myself into an athlete that can handle the high mileage. Now I'm focusing more on threshold, a lot more threshold work, and a lot more, there's leg speed every week with my training now.
The uncomfortable stuff though, threshold and beyond.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that people kind of shy away from because it is hard.
Yeah, but I mean, the leg speed isn't too difficult. What we do in training, there's enough rest that you're not hurting for that long. So you're only hurting for the length of the rep, and you get enough recovery so you can run it well and comfortable. And I'm not trying to run really fast, well under 3 minute k's or whatever for my reps. Like, there are some people at my ability level that would do their reps at that kind of speed. I do them a little bit slower, so I'm in control, but still going quite quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your favorite kind of workout then? You know, if you've got other, obviously you're doing lots of long runs and the mileage, but as far as that, getting that leg speed going, what is your sort of preferred workout?
I guess it very I do prefer just something like 600s. You
Yep.
know, they're not really short like 400s. They're not. I think you'd probably get a lot of benefit out of your 1Ks, but your 600s are good enough to develop your speed. So the getting close to your sort of goal 1K rep speed.
Yeah.
But you're just it's short enough that it. That you can do it,
Yeah.
yes.
No, it's
Because
I've never done 600
if you
reps.
try to run 1K reps at a really fast speed and you don't have the fitness, it's gonna become really difficult and you can sort of wipe yourself out a bit. So if you go a bit shorter, you can
Maintain
you can
more.
maintain a good pace
Yeah.
and build your fitness and hopefully extend that to your 1K reps.
Excellent. And something that I get a lot of people ask me about, the recovery, if you're doing, whether it's 600 meter reps, 1K reps, or whatever, how do you and your coach Grenville, how do you like monitor, what does he say with your recovery between each rep? Because I, as a coach for myself, I'm not so focused on it has to be exactly 2 minutes or exactly 1 minute. So what's your angle on that?
But you can change the it depends on what session you're trying to do. You can change it around depending on. It can be a fartlek if you're looking to get some sort of race fitness. You can do it as a fartlek, so you do a float,
Yeah. So
or a
like
jog recovery. But otherwise, if you're trying to get your speed in,
Mm.
then you take a longer rep and a longer rest. And if you feel like you need more rest, you just take it. Or you take quite often what we'd be doing is we do a set of say three sixes, and then we take a jog back for a full 600 meter jog, easy recovery. Between so you don't
Get
feel
that.
like you're really stringing out a whole lot of reps together. You take a break halfway through your rep session
Yeah.
to make sure that you are recovered and running them well.
Yeah, I think it's sort of more important to get the work done than to burn out 2 reps in, you know, and so which a lot of people do. And it's and I think the whole part of the whole point of why I do this podcast is I like, you know, to get input of people who've done it and who know that it works and you know, and so that's really
Well,
insightful.
it's just how I'm doing it. I don't purport to be a coach or anything, but
Yeah.
I've got a fair idea of
Experience counts
what
a
seems
lot.
to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I
And
agree
I'm
with
still
you.
learning, but this
Yeah.
is what I'm picking up at the moment.
My big, what I generally do with the recovery when I do speed sessions with people is I often do, I sort of use heart rate as a little bit of a guide. You know, I'll allow, you know, when your heart rate gets down to, you know, about 60% or 60 to 70% of your maximum again, then we're ready to go. And so, but obviously that's different for everybody. Some people can get back down to 60% in a minute, and other people it might take them 3 minutes, you know. So it's a very individualized thing.
I
And
mean, the main thing I think is to just get through the session well, and you can always progress it next time. You know, you don't have to try to smash out an awesome session the first time you head out there and do it.
we live in an age where everyone wants a hack. They want a shortcut to, there's no shortcuts that I've come across yet. The biggest shortcut to success is to do the work, you know, and be
And
consistent.
I think if you're pushing it really too deep, I don't think you'd get as good an improvement. I mean, you kind of your body doesn't seem to respond as well. So if you've got a little bit extra, then I think you can come forward. And that's what I found. Something like my taper runs, like my taper leading into Sydney was 5 1Ks on a Tuesday, and I was only doing them at my a couple of seconds quicker than my marathon pace, which is
Quite comfortable,
a lot slower than if I was doing, you know, normal 10K training, which would be running them close to 10K pace or 5K pace, 3K pace, whatever.
But that would
So
have felt good too, like just to really get the legs
that's right.
firing,
Y exactly. And then. So that's allowed my body to recover and so on and feel good and then easily do it on race day.
Excellent. No, really, that's very insightful. And what was like your longest single training run, like your long runs, what in the lead up to, say, well, this last couple of weeks? What was...
Yeah. I didn't do a lot of mileage as far as long runs. Obviously, I've done lots of marathons under my belt.
Yeah.
I did the Greenbelt 30. That was quite a hard long run. That was a couple months out.
Yeah.
As far as doing an easy long run, I don't think I did that many. I mean, I'd have to look on Strava, but maybe I did a 2.5 hour run with a 20-minute fast finish.
Yeah.
Might have been, so it would have been a bit over 2 hours to start with, and then about 5 or 6 Ks at marathon at 3:30 pace.
Yeah.
To finish.
Just to replicate that speed.
But
again, yeah.
The heavy session that I did about 4 weeks out or 3 weeks out, I think it was 3 weeks out, I did 15K at marathon pace in the morning and then 15K at marathon pace in the afternoon.
So giving yourself how many hours in between? 12 hours? Less than 12 hours?
Under 12 hours. Yeah, so it was two 20K runs because of warm-up and cool-down.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first one I did it 3:34, so I was expecting that I'd be able to average about 3:35s from how I was feeling in training, but when I ran the second one, I pushed it a bit deeper and I averaged 3:32s for the second one, so I realised that I was in pretty good shape and I could do that. So it's kind of those super sessions is sort of the way I'm heading a lot with my training. Rather than doing a long run, I do a run where it's a fast finish or a lot of it at marathon pace. Another one I did earlier in the build up was a 2 hour run where I think I did three or four lots of about 10-minute efforts in there at marathon pace. So again, it's really quite a tough long run to have a fair bit of it at marathon pace.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
that's good. It's interesting. Yeah, you're often talking about marathon pace, and I'm a big believer in, you know, you should have the race pace, whatever distance you're doing, you should have that coming out in your ears, you know, because you should be so accustomed to running at that particular speed. So even if it is only a 5K run, but you're doing it at that speed, you know, so your body knows that's exactly how fast your legs are going to move. You know, sounds like that's, you believe that as well.
To feel comfortable with that at speed, because you don't want to be sort of over revving and feeling like you're going too quick, even though you're at theoretically what you should be aiming for.
Yeah.
But
I also do, I think I'm also, I should probably clarify, I am also a big believer in running really slow, you know, like, especially for the ultra stuff. You know, I do a lot of low heart rate training where I'm training for some longer races at the moment, and obviously you've got to get used to running slow.
My recovery runs are a lot slower than a lot of my peers on Strava. That's fine by me. It's all about getting in good quality sessions.
So, yeah, put the ego aside. Strava ego aside. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think
I'm happy if I can get under 5 minute Ks, but sometimes I can't. You know, I'll be just taking it easy, and that, I know that I've got something important session coming up, or I've just done something really big. So it's okay to just jog it. Yeah.
Recovery is so interesting, you know, and fatigue is something that's very individual, because I mean your heart's fatigued, your legs are fatigued, like your whole body's fatigued. So your heart rate's going to shoot up when you're tired. And and if you're a bit dehydrated as well, then you probably found that on Sunday, you know, your heart rate goes up.
And sometimes, I mean, my heart rate might be really low, but my legs will be smashed, so I'll just cruise it anyway. at a very low heart rate, because that's what I need to do for the day is recover.
Yeah. I was just going to say, so what's the next? I mean, I've got a few more topics I want to cover with you, but what's coming up next for you with the racing?
Yeah, well, next, immediately coming up, I've got Queenstown Marathon in New Zealand in 8 weeks.
Oh, cool.
So I'm doing that. I ran it in 2015 and got third, so I'm hoping to do better this time around. But
is it hilly or is it flat?
It's...
I imagine it would be hilly.
It's kind of like our green belt, except it's on 70% trail. So 70% hardpack trail. So there's a few short... really steep hills, but apart from that, it's kind of like It's a net downhill gradient, so it's not too bad.
It's a very hilly area and beautiful area, so that'd be nice.
So most of the time it's going along the lake, kind of like going along the Torrens here. It's gradually downhill, but there's some short pinches all the way through.
Well, the Greenbelt Challenge, I know, because I run around this area a lot, and there are a few little sharp uphills early on in the race in that distance.
There's plenty of them through it, but it's nothing huge.
Cool, that sounds like a good race. And
and then after that, I'm also looking to I'll probably give 6 foot track a go this year and give that a proper go. That'll probably be the next one after that.
Open the Blue Mountains, that's a proper trail race. So I haven't
done it before, but I thought I'll give a proper trail race a proper go.
It's probably it's got quite a history, that race, and it's one of the, I think, first sort of proper trail races in Australia, but quite challenging. And when is that?
That's in March.
Right then. So.
So I'm not sure. I haven't done it before, but ever since probably 4 years ago when I did one of my first interstate marathons, I had some people say, look, you should really give it a go, but I just haven't got around to doing it. So
it sounds like you've got, I can see a bit of a pattern emerging here. It sounds like you're moving a bit away from the roads a bit and moving towards the trails, or you still love the roads?
I think I've still got a little bit more time to gain on the roads, a little more. I think I can improve my PB a bit.
Yeah.
I can't see myself doing it forever. So probably transition into trails. And that's what I've done this year, is my first three trail ultras. I did the Black Hill Challenge a few years ago, and that's the only other trail race I've done.
And it's short but bloody challenging, short, isn't it? It's amazing. So would you ever consider going longer, like looking up the 100K distance?
I think it's all going to be a learning experience for me.
Yeah.
When I was running Yarrabella, I was thinking, this is very similar to Cleland, and I'm really, really out of my depth past 40K. I can manage myself quite well to 40K. I think if I can pick up enough experience. Now, if I can have a few good experiences, like I haven't had a good experience at 50K plus yet, so as far as getting through it, running how I'd expected. So, we'll see.
It definitely just takes practice and experience, like anything. Yeah. It is a very different beast, though, to a road race.
I think Tarawera would be quite interesting for me to have a go at, but I realise that at the moment I'm not at. I haven't quite done enough learning on the nutrition side and the pacing side to be able to manage that.
It would just be
a progression, but I'll keep.
Lots of people do transition up. Some people just take the leap; they go straight from marathon to 100K, which is madness. But
I'm always wanting to do well,
Exactly, and I think it takes, like, to go to those longer distances. It almost takes a shift in your thinking when you're running. Like, it just totally, I mean, obviously nutrition is a big part, but the mindset is so different as well. You've got to be a little bit more prepared for the unexpected, because you can't nail splits. You can't go bang, 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 because you could have, even if you're having a good run, you could have a 10-minute K, and then, because you're going up a hard hill, or you've got to,
you're still good. Doing all right.
And there's quite often there's toilet stops. You don't do that in a marathon. That'd be race over almost if you had to make a toilet spot. Because it's a game of seconds, whereas an ultra becomes a game of minutes and hours. And it is fascinating how I've been saying, like, the 100K distance has become like the new marathon. People are racing that at extreme speed now. The current world record for the marathon, 100K, is 6 hours and 28. Just recently, Japanese guy, six. It's very fast.
Yeah, so that's pretty much marathon marathon pace for the whole way. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is. It's just their proper. I know Brendan Davies. He represented for Australia, and he did a 7:08 for the 100, which is really impressive. And I mean, you yourself running 2:30. So, I mean, you'd like to obviously get under the 2:30 barrier, but then you look at guys, which is an incredible I mean, I'm sure you'll get there with the maturity of your racing. But then you look at just the same weekend that you ran Sydney, you've got the Eliud Kipchoge over in the Berlin Marathon.
Yes.
Smashing out a 2:01:39. Looked comfortable, you know. What are your thoughts on the marathon world record and all that?
Yeah, well, I think as an athlete, he's always had a lot of success on the track. So he's brought the speed. And for the marathon, you really need to have a lot of speed up your sleeve so that your marathon pace doesn't feel too quick.
Yeah.
So that's part of my training as well, is to get to make sure that I'm doing enough speed work so that my marathon pace doesn't feel too quick. And he was leading the world's best at the age of 18 and
I
think 5,000. So
5,000, and he's just progressively gone up in distance.
Yeah, so he's had the perfect lead in, and he's always been quite a talented athlete. So combine that with the fact that he's been racing as a professional for so many years, that's what's enabled him to do that. I think it's more of a one of a kind athlete rather than just part of, you know, this is the way the marathon is evolving.
But I mean he won at Berlin against the former world record holder by like 5 minutes, you know, which is just, it's mind-blowing. Second and third were both 2:05 or something, which is still incredibly good running, but it makes them look, you know, positively slow comparatively.
That's a lot of time. Yeah, it's a lot of time, a lot of distance covered.
Well, at the pace he's going, it's almost 2 kilometres difference. And which for most normal runners, that's just, it's breathtaking. But I mean, I'm thinking about Kipchoge, and I mean, if the 2 hour marathon's going to get broken anytime soon, it's got to be him. You know, he's the only one that's
even, what I think as well.
And I mean, a lot of people say, "Oh no, he's done now," but he hasn't had a bad run yet, and so maybe if he hasn't.
Yeah.
And when he crossed,
well, he's doing everything right, and if you're doing everything right, usually you're on the improve. So
He didn't come staggering across that finish line. He cruised across the finish line.
Yeah.
He looked like he could have kept going. You know, like, I know obviously he was running probably right at his red line. But I think biomechanics is a big part of it. He runs, you look at him, he doesn't look like he's trying, you know.
Yeah. Well, he's done a lot of that marathon pace. His 1K reps are only a little bit faster than the marathon pace. Obviously, it's difficult when you're running at, you know, just over 250Ks. That's a marathon pace. But I mean, if he really wanted to, he could be running his 1K reps at close to 230, you know, 60 second laps or whatever. But he's not. He's running them at 2:45 to 2:48, sort of. He runs his 1K reps at close to his marathon pace, again, just to get that efficiency and be comfortable at that speed rather than really
blowing himself out over his
interval sessions.
And I think it's interesting you bring that up, because a lot of people talk, you know, they go into speed sessions and they just push themselves so hard to their vomiting. But I think, and then they can't run for 3 days after that. And I'd say you should be ready to go the next day, you know. So you don't want to, I look at one training session to the next, it's just preparing you for the following day, you know. And if you're not ready, if you go too hard, you're going to have 3 days off, you know. And
you've got to enjoy yourself while you're doing it. You don't want to be really suffering. The way you improve is to be able to get through it. Next time it feels a bit better, hopefully.
It's amazing. So did you, before you got into marathon running, where was your running? Where was your fitness background?
Yeah, I guess to cut a long story short, I've been doing triathlon since I was 15, up until until probably the age of 30-ish, and then I took a bit of a break when I had kids, and I've come back and done marathons since then.
Yeah, right. Did you perform well at triathlons?
I was taking it really seriously, and I managed an Australian title in my age group in 2003 at Mooloolaba over Olympic distance, and that meant that I raced professional the following year after that. So I've been on the start line with Olympic level ITU guys. So yeah, that yeah, triathlon was a big thing, and I thought that I'd be doing that all the way through, but just with kids, didn't have the time to get out there to train with the swim squad, which is I think the biggest part of about triathlon for me was just finding a good swim squad to train with. And so yeah, I thought, well, marathoning, I've probably got enough time in the day to do that. So
just marathoning.
Yeah, so for me it was just marathoning. Yeah,
but I know
because I was, you know, when you're doing triathlon, you've got to train 5 or 6 times in each times per week in each discipline. So you're doing so many training sessions or combining them and so on. So
cycling would be probably the biggest time consumer, wouldn't it? Or
yes, it is. Yeah, it's a big time consumer. I've always found cycling the easiest to improve, though, easier than running or swimming to improve.
Yeah.
But again, that's just because all you need to do is get on there and do it for the most part.
I have to say, I absolutely love watching. I've never done a triathlon, and because I'm a terrible swimmer, I should improve it. But I absolutely love watching it on TV. It's a great spectator sport, I think. And it's good. It gets good coverage, and I wish better coverage than marathon running. I wish it would the marathon running and trail running would get that same kind of coverage.
Yeah.
But you look at guys.
It's different
like,
culture, isn't it? I mean, in Japan, you probably do get the same coverage for a marathon, but not in Australia.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in Japan, they have. I spent some time in Japan. And because the Ekiden relays are really big.
Oh, yeah.
But they do them over 100 kilometres.
Okay.
On New Year's Day, I don't know what it's called. I could probably just Google it. They have all the best runners from all the universities all over Japan. They all get together and they have like this big 100K Ekiden relay. And so, and it's televised on the national broadcast and everyone watches it. It's like, it's a really, because it's like they're cheering for the university that they studied at or whatever. And it's amazing. And that's where you've got guys like Kawauchi, I think that's where he sort of started coming up in the marathon world. And I mean, that guy's now done something like 80 sub 220 marathons or something. He won Sydney back when I did it. And,
I'm sure he's quite an inspiration for most people that you can.
Yeah.
You can get there by training once a day and use your marathons as training.
But I mean, very simplistic approach to training, I think he was. And he works a full-time job and doesn't, and he's not a sponsored athlete. And that's Are you sponsored?
No, I'm not sponsored. No.
Not sponsored yet?
Not yet.
No? Anyone out there who would like to sponsor John, just shoot him a message. Maybe buy some shoes.
You're likely to feature in a fair few posts on, or you can say that you've got such and such a winner.
Absolutely. I think it's a
bloody outrage. Great exposure for anyone. For sure.
I think that you're sounds like your racing career is going from strength to strength, and I think definitely there's, I mean, things like sponsorship is a funny one because I think some people. I don't know, it depends on the company, I suppose, and who you get to, because you don't necessarily have to be even the best runner. They just want exposure, a lot of them.
Yep.
But I think it helps to have a great runner,
Yeah, so, it does,
get on it, sponsors, before you miss out. No, it's awesome. It's really super insightful stuff that you've given me there, and I think that the listeners will really enjoy it, and do you think and hopefully that people have learned something from you as well, and if people want to ask you questions, you're happy for them to hit you up somewhere or just to follow you and see
I put everything on Strava, and I'm very active on Strava. I like to try to give as much information to everyone that's following about how my training's going and what I'm doing.
You do a vlog sometimes as well?
I have been doing some vlogs, and I've been getting a fair few requests for more of them. So I keep trying to do them. And I think they are really good. You can find the links to them on my Strava as well. So
awesome. I think it's really good that you're sharing your content, you're sharing your training. Some people get very protective about it,
That's right. I'm not worried about being beaten by some young up-and-comer that's learned from what I've taught them, because I realise that my time here is fairly limited. I'm 40 now, so I've got a few more years of good racing, but
definitely.
But I'll be happy if I can bring someone who can come up to a much higher level than I ever do. That'd be great for them to be influenced in some way.
Well, that's what I've done. It's a good way to pass on your legacy, you know. Would you ever go into coaching? Is it down the track? Is that something that you've considered?
I've considered it, and I've been asked a few times, but I think at the moment I just want to be fully focused on what I'm doing for myself and try to get the most out of myself. I mean, I'd like to, for my kids to maybe get into running, and maybe I could help them do that.
How many kids have you got?
I've got two, David and Josh, 11 and 9.
See, it's proof you can be an awesome runner and have a family. I've got three, and, you know, I'm not as fast as you, but I'm making my training work, and so you just got to make it happen.
It's a very time-efficient sport, so, you know, it's just a matter of getting out there and following some sort of a structure in your program, and as long as you can do what you can to avoid injury as well, that's probably the biggest thing, I think, because when you're out consistently training, I find that you're almost always improving. It's just when you get injured you need to... Or sick. A lot of parents get sick quite often. Obviously, that's what that comes with the territory of having kids with other kids. Provided you can keep consistent.
So your kids must think you're pretty awesome. They're pretty stoked with you on the weekend.
That's right. It's it's no big deal for them most of the time. Like they're sort of like, oh, dad always wins is the comment that they say, but. You can tell they're really proud.
Absolutely. And look, I think it's such a positive sport to, that's why I want my kids to be involved, you know, like it's such a good atmosphere, you know, like everyone's so, especially trail running, I feel like it's not toxic at all, you know, like a lot
it's
of sports.
It's very positive, and you know, they're bombarded with electronics, and all their friends are into, you know, video games and that all the time. They don't mind that. I mean, so much of what we're consuming is entertainment, is, you know, live streaming and so on. So it's a good for them to see something outside of that, and also seeing that whatever they want to do, if they can work for it, then they can get it.
So whether it's running or something.
Yeah, or else, just their schoolwork. You know, it's all worthwhile. So,
absolutely. Yeah. It's good. Do they play any sports at the moment?
David does soccer. Joshua, not so much at the moment.
You'll find something, I'm sure. And obviously got some good genetics there, so
for anyone listening, it's not about genetics, it's about how much you work. That's my opinion anyway.
I think it's a little bit of both, you know, but I mean, absolutely, what they say, it's 50% physical and 90%
I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it. There's diet and so on, and I mean, a lot of diseases run in families because diet runs in families. If you can focus on your diet, I don't think genetics is all that important. This is my opinion.
It's good. And that's another, going back to what old mate Eliud Kipchoge, his motto is great, I think, you know. He always says no human is limited, you know.
Well, he's got the mental game more than anyone I've seen anywhere. Yeah, you know, just anything that...
So certain.
Any time that you have any interaction with him, you can just tell that his mind is at a very high level.
I'd love to meet him, you know. And I think that he's just got... There was the Breaking 2 documentary that they made about that whole thing. I mean, God, it was a really interesting study of what they did, and I think they could have broken it if they did it a different way, a few different things, but I'm not a scientist. But the best part of it was him, you know? Yeah. Like, just every time he spoke on camera, I just wanted to hear more, you know? Yeah. He had some really good insights, but he had absolute certainty. Absolute certainty. Yeah. But also, he wasn't, like, hard on himself that he didn't break it. He still ran the fastest marathon that anyone's ever run, you know?
And so if you spent a lot of time thinking, well, what would be the best way to approach this? That's what he came through with.
Someone asked me the other day, who was the more amazing athlete? Would it be Eliud Kipchoge or the more amazing record, Eliud Kipchoge's marathon world record or Usain Bolt's 100 meters world record? I'm going towards Kipchoge mainly because of his humility and his that he's progressively worked his way up over a long period. Not to say I think he's amazing as well. What do you think?
Well, I think with you saying there's a question over whether he's been clean all this time, because there was a lot of time when there was no drug testing in Jamaica. So
really, that would be terribly disappointing.
It'd be terribly disappointing, but we're never going to know anyway. So you just have to embrace what he's done.
Yeah.
Even if he wasn't clean, it's still really fast. So
I tell you, that's an interesting discussion in and of itself. The whole the drug conversation, you know, because it's so, you know, like so many ways people cheat now.
I mean, it sounds really unfair if an athlete's clean, but if everyone is competing against. Is doing sort of the same sort of things, then who knows?
It's like with Lance Armstrong. I mean, I always come in the classic example. I remember reading his book, it's not about the bike, and learning about his cancer recovery. And I was like truly inspired by his book. I was like, this is great. I almost felt like taking up cycling. Sorry, and then to find out, I just felt I felt really betrayed, you know?
Yeah,
it's such a betrayal.
Yeah, it was a bit strange. Yeah, you see, the reason why he had the cancer is because he's taken all this crap. So
yeah, it's interesting. Just left that little part out. But he actually got into trail running, and fairly recently, and he's quite an accomplished trail runner. And so, I don't know. I guess he'd be pretty heavily tested now. And trail running is getting a bit of I know that they're starting to test a lot more now in the bigger events, you know, and obviously amateur level events not so much.
But yeah, well, I got drug tested for the first time at Sydney. So
is it because it was it after the race?
Yeah, so straight after the race.
Yeah.
Congratulations! Yep, we'll take off the drug testing now. So it was something new for me.
Is that just top 10 finishes or?
Yeah, they had I think just the podium in the overall race plus the Australian marathon champions.
I think I would feel a certain being if you're obviously a clean athlete. I'd feel kind of proud to walk in and go, "Yep, clean," you know.
Yeah, so I was. that's a new, obviously, it's kind of a measure of being going up to the next level is the fact you actually get drug tested, whereas you wouldn't if you were.
Yeah. Is it a urine test or is it a blood test?
Yeah, it was just the urine test.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing was that I missed my presentations for the Australian titles because I was in there and I was actually at the end of the queue with the you had to wait for everyone else to do theirs. So, so I ended up missing out on the presentations, which was a real bummer.
That doesn't sound right at all. Robbed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had this presentation set for a certain time and then they changed it. So I was there when they told me to, but then I had to go into drug testing after that. So
I can't actually believe that. That seems like a real.
So you win, but then you can't.
Yeah.
But you can't get the acknowledgement. But
no.
I've got some good footage of me crossing the line and MC really going for it. So I'm pretty happy with that.
It was it's a great finish coming into the Opera House right there, and even the start of that race is great when you go across the bridge.
Yes.
You know, I loved all that. But I'll definitely want to go back and do Sydney again. I mean, it's not the race where you generally would run a fast time because there's lots of turnarounds.
Yep.
And so if you went to somewhere like, is it Melbourne? Melbourne's pretty quick, isn't it?
Melbourne's quick if the weather's with you on the day. So a couple of years ago, they had basically Melbourne, you know, really wintry weather.
Yeah.
But yeah, if the weather's good, you can really have a really good time in Melbourne. Then Gold Coast is also quick as well.
Yeah.
Some people struggle because of the heat, but I think it's really good.
Did you do Gold Coast this year?
No, I haven't done Gold Coast for a few years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, so, and Adelaide's not, it's not a PB course really, is it? Is it? Well, they changed it again this year.
Yeah, they've reduced the hills, so it's a lot less hilly, but it's still very twisty and turny, so you're slowing down a lot with that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So before we finish up, I'll go into my fast five questions that I ask everyone.
Okay.
Like it's the same five questions, and Everyone, they're just sort of fairly quick answers, and yeah, it just gets a good, gives people some a bit more of an insight. All right, are you feeling ready?
Okay.
Yep. All right. Question one: what is your favorite running film or documentary?
Okay. Well, I like whatever's been put on YouTube by I think it's UTMB or something like what. The Ultra Trail. I like all of their summaries of how the elites, you know, how the race pans out for their races. Probably my favourite was when Queenstown did that for 2015 marathon that I was in, and they were going through all the how the race was unfolding in the elites, and I was one of the four in the elite pack. So I really enjoyed that.
Good
and
coverage.
I like how they can just give something more for the elites that might not get any recognition otherwise. So that's why you start to have, you know, household names among the running community of the big guys like Killian and so on because of those documentaries. So I really like them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I love. There's some really good content on YouTube at the moment. Oh, it's coming more and more. And race coverage. Okay, so question two. What is your dream race or bucket list race that you would like to do, whether it's a marathon or a trail run?
For a while, it's been Lake Biwa in Japan. That's a race where to qualify, you need to run a sub-230 marathon, and they have over 300 runners in the event. So I'm thinking if I can get that 230 marathon at some stage, then I can do that one. And the fact that I'll be in a large group of runners running
all fast.
At about my speed, a little bit quicker, I could get a really good PB. So that's the goal for mine, Lake Biwa in Japan. I think that's February each year, so I'll have to work out
which... It's cold too, February.
So I have to work out which year I'll do it, but I don't have too many left, so hopefully I'll get a sub-230 soon so I can give that a crack.
I'm sure you can. That sounds interesting. Okay, question three. What is your favourite post-race... How do you treat yourself at the end of a race?
I really don't worry too much about post-race treats. I guess I enjoyed some chips after Yarrabilla on Sunday. That I usually don't because I'm worried about the fat content in my diet because that's not good for your arteries or anything. But
you're pretty depleted, so you probably need some carbs.
I just enjoyed the salt and the sugar. Yeah, salt and the fat.
How good is salt when you're hot
when
and
you're out
tight?
Of it,
it's amazing. Yeah, no, good chips is fine. Right, question four, I think we probably already answered this indirectly throughout the whole interview, is roads or trails? What do you prefer?
At the moment, roads. Yeah. I'm not enjoying myself enough out on the trails. I don't think I've got it right yet. So it's a challenge, and I guess that's why I'd like to meet that challenge. But I'd say roads is what I enjoy at the moment. So we'll see. I think it's just a progression. I mean, what the only things that are worthwhile are things that challenge you. So, the idea is to go into trails, but I consider myself a road runner still.
Yeah. Fair enough. You've got to play to your strengths, don't you?
Yeah.
And question five is, I would like you to finish this sentence. Running gives me...
It gives me purpose.
Purpose.
Yeah.
In what way?
Being a role model for my kids, finding something worthwhile that gives me a benefit. So it gives me a purpose. Otherwise, I'd be doing something else. Or I'm kind of this. I like to focus on something that I can, you know, get some sort of benefit out of. So that's it gives me the purpose.
Yeah.
Gives me something to do in my day. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I think you probably are an excellent role model for your kids, by the sounds of it, and hopefully a really good role model for everyone who's listened today. And
You guys can do it. Just, you know, believe in yourselves. Yeah.
Self-belief is very important, isn't it? Yeah. Well, John, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. And we'll have to get you back on and have another chat sometime soon, see how you're going.
Definitely.
Get a few more trail runs under
your
belt.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have some great stories to share.
Yeah. Awesome, John. You take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks.
hope you enjoyed this episode of the Trail Runners Experience. Don't forget to share this episode on social media if you did enjoy it. That would help me out a lot. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Trail Runners Experience. Happy running!